Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 17 of the Herald's Horn. On this episode, I am joined by both Emma and Dan, spoilers, I know, to talk about, well, mainly products. Not a whole lot going on this week, but we do have Arena news to talk about. We talk about new secret lairs, talk about, kind of how we're feeling about Magic in general right now. It does come up. After the break, I will be interviewing Ian, better known as Comedian MTG, CEDH Tournament Extraordinaire. We talk about how he got into Magic, why he enjoys playing CEDH so much, how he keeps winning a little tiny bit, and kind of just talk about the growth of CEDH in general. It's a great episode, as usual. I am biased, but let's get into it. Also, if you would like to send in a letter for us to discuss on the podcast, we would love more letters to the editor. Hit me up at editorial@heraldshorn.com. Again, that is editorial@heraldshorn.com. We would love to read your letter out on the podcast and discuss it, as long as it's reasonable. Hello! It's time for the Herald's Horn. My name is Cal Jones, and today I am, as nearly always, joined by the Emma Partlow. What is up, Emma?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing just grand. It's another day here in the Cal Complex. That's the new name for my office that I just came up with.
It's pretty good.
You are in the Emma Emporium.
I was going to suggest Emporium.
Emporium? That's the first word I could come up with.
I did think it could be Emma Express as well. That was the
Emma
other
Express?
One.
Yeah, that's
which
okay.
One implies more power?
Emporium. It's got the word empire in it. British people know of the empire.
No, it has the word empire in it.
Wait, the Emma Empire?
Don't want to go that far. You know, I'm British. No, you guys are American. That's just going to cause
some... You can't do that if you're British.
Yeah. People don't like that.
Coming at you all the way from Modanon headquarters. It's not alliterative. We also have Dan. Thanks for hopping on the line, Dan. I know it's a big, busy day for you.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I think the most important thing about the Modanon headquarters is not that it's not alliterative, but that it very much disguises the fact that I'm always broadcasting from my bedroom.
That I could see that like being construed as your headquarters.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Your title says you just farted big. Do you have any responses?
I would claim sabotage, but only because I don't even know how you can do that.
I just saw the Baldur's Gate free brain under my name, so I appreciate that, Cal.
It's much better than just farted big.
Hey, it's better than farting small. Gotta get it out.
We have to do this episode. Okay. Cue the intro music.
And welcome back. As always, we are going to jump directly into the news. Thank goodness it's another kind of dry week. In fact, everything I wrote down came down the pipeline today, the day that we are recording this episode. We had some like bigger arena updates kind of this time around. We hear from the arena team fairly often, but usually the updates are kind of a little bit like, oh, here's the events we're going to be doing next week. Oh, did you know that you can play in this event to qualify for the Pro Tour? That's so fun. We fixed a tiny bug, but we had a little bit of a bigger discussion this time. Two big takeaways. Number one, let's start here. Pioneer Masters, a set that I believe was originally supposed to come out roughly Q4 of this year, Q4 2024-ish. I don't remember exactly. It was a very hand-wavy, like, later this year, early next year kind of time frame. Pioneer Masters was supposed to be a set coming specifically just to Arena so that they could finally get much of the missing Pioneer staples onto Arena. Because, like, as of right now, Arena is very close to basically having the whole Pioneer format, but it is basically not quite there. So Wizards has wanted to release a, like, bigger booster box, a booster product that they could publish onto the platform and people could open packs from, and, you know, they could finally play full Pioneer rather than, what, Explorer, which is almost Pioneer. So they said, hey, it's still coming, we swear, guys, but we don't have a solid date for you yet. Dan, I know this has you in shambles.
Yeah, I am the world's biggest Pioneer fan. I know the meta very well. I know what cards are legal and which cards are not legal. I honestly was going to ask you if this is like a digital or paper only thing. I don't even remember
this. It is a digital only thing. It's like an Arena only product, so they could put the last X amount of cards they need onto Arena to have like the meaningful cards of the format.
I'm looking at it now on the MTG Wiki, and it says that the original projected release date was... the set was originally planned for release at the end of 2020.
Holy moly.
Is that Pioneer Masters or Pioneer Horizons?
Pioneer Masters.
Okay.
Is this different than Pioneer Horizons?
So there was there was loose conversations. Unsure if they're confirmed, but Wizards were toying with the idea of having Modern Horizons, but that's essentially like Pioneer at some point. I don't know if that's actually true, but that was a conversation. But yeah, I'm surprised they haven't just like released Pioneer Masters, because it's Arena, for Christ's sake. You can just put it somewhere. Maybe there's just some weird bugs or things that are happening with cards that they're trying to put in and they're just not working properly. I don't know.
I do, now that you mentioned that, Dan, I do recall something to that effect, kind of like when they did announce Pioneer as a format. Arena definitely was already a thing, but they definitely had a lot of sets they needed to add onto the platform, and so they were talking about potential ways to do that, and then it seems like for whatever reason the project that just gets continually put on the back burner, probably maybe even because like Explorer was less popular than they thought it would be, or Pioneer in general isn't that popular right now because a lot of people aren't happy with the state of the format. We've talked about that a lot.
People are just playing sick of their... The problem is with Arena, you have so many like eternal formats, stuff like Timeless and Alchemy. People are probably just playing Historic, and people are probably just playing those. So what benefit is there to adding Pioneer to the fold? It's a little bit like Explorer. It's a little bit like Historic. It's like, it's got a huge identity crisis in the midst of all these weird, quirky formats that Wizards introduced like during like the pandemic era, especially.
Yeah, that would be my question. It's just like, who can feasibly get into this? Because if you are new to Arena, you can finally buy sets of rare and mythic wild cards. But for the longest time, that was not true. But even still, like, cost an obscene amount of money to try to buy into one of these decks if you're brand new to the format. And if you are have been playing Pioneer on Magic Online for as long as it's been a thing, like, you probably got a good collection over there, and there's no real reason to transfer that time and energy over to a new client.
I think that is the one thing that continually does annoy me about Arena so much, is that, like, if you fall off the boat, it is really hard to get back on without spending a metric ton of money, or playing like being a your options are spending a ton of money or grinding out a lot of time while also being like a 60% plus win rate limited player. Like, those are your two options to really be, because even like me, I've been interested in playing Explorer, I've been interested in playing Timeless, and I do have like a very extensive Arena account up until about like even new Innistrad sets. Like, Crimson Vow is like finally when I fell off, and I have pretty much every staple you could ask for up until that point. And even then, I try to hop into like, I take a look at Timeless or Brawl or whatever, and I'm like, oh, to play what I would like to play, I still need to spend, I don't know, $60. So I'm just like, okay, never mind. And then I play a sealed league of Bloomburrow and log off for the next 3 months.
That's kind of where I'm at with it, too. Like, I've been playing Arena very steadily since beta. I was, like, drafting Ravnica, whatever was the Guilds of Ravnica, I think, was the set at the time. But I would always think at that very early stage, like, if you're not here playing in beta and getting these shocklands, like, how are you ever going to play, like, Eternal Formats on Arena? Like, it's so difficult to, like, and now that there's all of the fetch lands as well, like, just getting your mana base to put together for your Arena deck is, like, a huge hurdle to overcome.
Maybe they should just make everything maybe they should just make all the lands uncommon. Has anyone thought about
maybe
this?
Maybe they I have should more just uncommon wild cards and incentives in physical booster packs to encourage you to use those to buy products and use them on Arena like they do with Pokemon.
And they have got to introduce a dusting system, because it's just ridiculous that, like, you get locked into decks that get banned. And I know they used to give you back your wild cards. I'm not sure if they do anymore, but even still, like, even if you just, like, make a deck that you don't end up really enjoying or falls out of the meta, like, then you're just stuck with those cards that are basically useless.
And plus, there's, like, a ton of reprints of the same cards as well at different rarities. It's, like, just seems really rough to navigate.
Yeah.
They do give you back your wild cards, but only exactly for whatever cards are banned. It is kind of like what we talked about last week. You know, they ban Nadu. You aren't getting washed on the Nadus. You're getting washed on the Shukos and whatever fetches you bought that you'll never play again, because who plays a Bant deck in Modern and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's exactly the same. You know, when they ban X card from a format, then you're out the 12 wild cards you made on those utility lands or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, speaking of the new player experience, speaking of all of the weird different formats and such that they have on Arena, they did also announce that starting around the beginning of Foundations, they're going to shift back towards, which is, this is kind of something I forgot they were doing. They're going to shift the new player's experience from kind of focusing on moving you towards alchemy, which is something they were really pushing there for a minute, which I get, it's a unique way of Magic that you can basically only play online, and there was some cool potential there that I think they kind of fumbled, but they are now going to, like, officially kind of move the new player focus back towards Standard. Holy moly, thank goodness. They said they want to rehab Standard at the local level, in the LGS at higher competition. I think a great start for that, or rather another very important building block, is getting people excited about Standard on Arena. And then hopefully they take that enthusiasm and move into, move into the paper space, which is, like, when I was in college, most of the people I knew who were starting to play Magic were, like, coming from Arena. They were like, wow, I started playing this, and then I started playing Standard, and I said, wait, I can just go hang out with people and also play this game? And that, I feel like that used to get a lot of people. There's a lot of people like Ixalan, Return to Ravnica, were the Spark era. I feel like so many people I know who came in around that era started on Arena. And now I hear about people learning about the game from Arena and coming in way less. And I wonder if that's because, like, a focus on alchemy or other digital-only formats have kind of, like, siloed people into being digital-only Magic players. I don't know. But very excited that alongside Foundations, which Wizards is obviously hoping is going to do a lot of work for Standard over the next couple of years, as an introductory product, as a foundation of the Standard format, literally and figuratively, I hope that a renewed focus in Arena on Standard will have a lot of dividends, both for the Arena player base, new players, experienced players, and people who just want to go to, you know, Standard FNM. Emma,
hello.
Are you looking to play Standard anytime soon?
Not really, just because my local game store does not support Standard or any of the constructed formats, really. My LGS has a common problem with most LGSs, is that Commander players is, you know, a very prominent part of the LGS space, which is great because you're getting people in the store, they buy snacks, they buy drinks and stuff. The problem is these Commander players aren't converting into FNM competitive players. My LGS base is super casual. So having an FNM, even for like Modern, which is, you know, the most popular constructed format, even despite the stuff that's going on with Modern Horizons 3, they just can't fire it. So why would they try and do standard? Sure, they get people for like RC keys and stuff, but people travel out of town to attend those RC keys. So yeah, I'm not interested in playing standard just because I can't play it at my store. And I don't mind playing online, but I take a lot of appreciation and merit to playing in person. That's how I was taught to play Magic, so I'm just going to keep playing it that way. That's the way I enjoy the game, is through actual social interaction. Unfortunately, I won't play Standard, which is a shame, because apparently Standard's great right now, because Bloomburrow has done a lot of good work, rotations happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm just going to keep cubing, I guess.
Dan, are they going to be able to drag you out of the Vintage Cube mines to get you to play some Standard on Arena? Is there something that could get you into it?
I honestly, I'm a person who largely in Magic, I got to see it to believe it. So I'd have to see some Standard play to see what it looks like and see how fun it really seems like. But I mean, traditionally, rotation is a fun time to be playing Standard. You get a lot of creativity going on, especially like before some of the like the bigger like tournaments start going on and people really start to solidify what's good in the new meta. So, like, if there ever was a time for me to do it, I guess this is the time, but I haven't been inspired thus far to do it. But yeah, I don't know. I sort of agree with Emma. I don't have a really great scene for it in my local area. The reason why I love playing Vintage Cube and Vintage and Legacy online is because that is primarily where it's happening. If those spaces were, like, firing off in paper more often, like in the Philadelphia area, I would definitely be more keen on getting to them. But yeah, it's probably not going to be enough to get me to go play it in paper. But I could certainly see myself dabbling with it on Arena if it becomes appealing to me. It's relatively easy for me to do so, especially since Wizards does tend to let me do those early access events. So as those goes on, it's easy for me to, like, if there's something cool looking in Standard, can at least try it out, especially with the new card. So that's, I don't know, could get me to play some.
Yeah, the thing is, for me in Arena, I haven't played Arena since Strixhaven. So my collection is ancient, and I am unwilling to spend the £200 to £300 that I would have to spend to put in a deck that I won't actually enjoy playing because it's online. I'm just someone that prefers playing in person.
Yeah.
And I would rather play on Magic Online over Arena because Magic Online has Cube. I know Arena also has Cube, but Magic Online has better cubes.
Oh my gosh. Arena Cube does not count as a real cube. That is the worst cube I've ever seen in my life. I'm sorry, really? I'm not going to bash on it. No, I've certainly seen worse. That's hyperbolic. But I hate that cube a lot. I don't think it's a good cube by any means. Just every deck is just five color good stuff, and there's no rhyme or reason or like archetypes. It's just like, hey, you remember that six drop mythic that was great? Here's 18 of them in a pack.
Fair. Well, does anyone else have any other news topics? Anything at all?
We're kind of in the lull period because Bloomburrow is out. You have a BNR happening in 2 weeks, so on the 26th. Mm-hmm. And then that weekend, you'll have Duskmourn preview. So this is like the quiet period before everything starts to ramp up again. So I'm enjoying it as somebody that has to work in Magic. I'm appreciating the quiet before the storm again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and also, like, our, usually it feels like now we'd kind of have, like, a pro tour or, I mean, I guess we kind of did just have a pro tour. But it feels like now is kind of the, we don't even get a pro tour for Bloomburrow, do we?
That is such a punt by Wizards. I'm sorry.
I forgot that they kind of slashed one from the calendar or there would at least normally be one in the calendar.
I just really wish. This is the problem when you have two massive back-to-back sets. One of them is not going to get a pro tour, especially in the summer, early fall period where, sets are historically well-selling because it's just that time of the year. I would have loved to have a Bloomburrow pro tour showcasing the new standard that's just rotated, getting people into standard, like who are into Bloomburrow. So Bloomburrow is the kind of set, I've said this on Twitter a few times already, Bloomburrow is the kind of set that just has the Universes Beyond pull without being Universes Beyond, in the sense that it's bringing people that have never heard about Magic before to Magic because they saw the animal set. I want to play with the animal set. So now they're into Magic. And a good way to get people hooked onto that is to display the Pro Tour. So So it would just been great just to see, I don't know, Rijik play, I don't know, Selesnya rabbits, and someone else was on Boris mice, and it just sells itself. And it's just a shame. Couldn't have that.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been a perfect opportunity to get a spotlight specifically on the set via Limited, and also get a spotlight on the set both directly and indirectly via new rotated standard, which seems to be awesome.
You should have made the RCQ standard instead. That would have taken a lot of heat off Wizards for having a modern RCQ with the whole Nardu thing going on. Sure, I understand they want people to play modern because the Modern Horizons free. Totally makes sense. But I just wish it was standard.
I'm sure when they were making the plans for the RCQ seasons and all that kind of stuff, they said, ooh, cool, Modern Horizons 3 coming out.
It makes sense.
Time to have a modern RCQ season. But yeah, it's not looking great. Well, we won't really have much in that in the way of like high-level competition to talk about until early October, when we have a regional championship Washington, D.C., October 4th. Through 6th. I am really hype about that one. I know this is really in the future because that was something like a little on the smaller side that was announced in the last 2 weeks. Star City Games will have full coverage of the regional championship, with the headliner, in my opinion, being the return of Patrick Sullivan to coverage. We're going to have Sed and Pat in the booth again with, Ellie and,
Corey.
On the other side, Corey BMTG. So I think that'll be a great time. But unfortunately, that is still not for another whole month and a half, which seems like a long ways away.
You will have a few other RCs that happen across the world at this point, but they don't always have coverage. I think the Canadian ones tend to have coverage, but it's everyone cares about the US RCs. I believe the European one will also have coverage. It's just we don't know when that is yet. No, SCG getting the RCs is great. Like, I think they had to get Patrick and Cedric back to advertise that.
Definitely.
Very excited to see those two back in the booth. It's going to be a very, very fun time. And SCG coverage is just the best there is.
Yeah. And everyone's like, wow, can you do it for SCG cons? And it's like, don't curl that monkey's paw.
Well, speaking of curling monkey paws, I think it is time for us to get on to our favorite recurring segment. It's time for the
Product Watch.
I really want us to do like it's like the intro of a metal song where it's Product Watch and it just shreds. I think that would be really fun.
Welcome to the Product Watch, the part of the show where we talk about all the new Magic the Gathering products coming down the conveyor belts of capitalism and consumerism for you to enjoy and play with, specifically in person, not on Arena.
Or not, because it's a lot of these are secret lairs and you might not be able to get a hold of them.
Exactly, Emma. Secret lairs. We've got some really cool D&D secret lairs coming up. I believe they've shown off two of them at time of recording to celebrate D&D's 50th anniversary. That's wild. That's wild. That's crazy. It's very old. Very old. So the two they have shown off thus far, I forget the name of the first one. Does that make me a bad person?
I didn't know that they named them. So, no.
Well, the first one is called Dungeons & Dragons, an Exhibition of Adventure, and features basically iconic D&D art from the last 50 years on different cards, most of them being covers from books. A great many people who are newer fans will notice, will recognize the Acerak, the Arklich. We've got the DM guide from 5th edition as the art. Sick. People who've been around a little longer, the 3rd edition monster manual with the creepy eye on the front. Yep, that's a monster manual now. That crazy old Larry Elmore card of an awesome red dragon being fought by a dude. That's a Goldspan dragon now.
It's so awesome. I'm really happy about that one.
My favorite D&D art of all time in an ironic sense, which is just the worst drawn beholder of all time from Dungeons & Dragons Supplement 1, from 1975. Yep, that's a Fell the Mighty.
You draw a beholder if you think you can do it so much better.
No, I will not do any better than that. That's the funny thing. But yes, it's just a bunch of awesome artwork put onto mostly quite good Magic cards. The cards we have here are Fell the Mighty, which is a little eh, obviously. But then we have a Faithless Looting. We have Goldspan Dragon. That's a big get. We have Reality Shift, which is one of my favorite removal spells of all time. We've got Monster Manual. We've got Ponder. And we've got SRS the Archlich, which kind of feels like the other more eh miss. But the art's awesome. All of the art here is awesome. And then today, right before we went live with recording, I did see that they announced a second one, which is called Asterion's Thirst or something similar to that. Let me pull up the card list really quick here.
The card list is not inspiring, but it will make a lot of people horny.
I was about to say the
artwork will make them horny.
The artwork, not the card list. Well, yeah, it's Asterion the Decadent, aka Asterion's card, Exquisite Blood, which is Exquisite Blood the Is Exquisite Blood the expensive one?
Yes. Sanguine yes. Bond is the one that's been printed at Uncommon. At
okay, so Exquisite Blood, that's a good get. Whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life. Featuring Asterion having just bitten a hot woman. So we're already off to the races here. Sanguine Bond, featuring him having just bitten a hot man. So we're really getting it for everyone here. Anguished Unmaking, featuring Asterion right in the middle of stabbing someone. And then Mortify, also featuring Asterion right in the middle of stabbing someone. So yes, like you said, Emma, a little bit of uninspiring cards, perhaps, like past Exquisite Blood, because I do think that's worth a decent chunk of change. But really what we have here, they really identified that a lot of people are really into Asterion. I honestly really hope that they end up coming out with a lot of these for one for each of the companions from Baldur's Gate 3. A lot of people are thirsty for Asterion, so I'm sure it a lot of people sense, will be
because vampires
buying this.
Are just really popular in Commander anyway, so it makes a ton of sense. There was also going to be a Karlach one at some point as well. That's one of the 5 drops that's happening. So
okay, yeah,
a Karlach one as well. Related cards yep. at some point.
That makes a lot of sense. So, yes, so far we have a Karlach one announced. They've shown off the Asterion one, and we also have an Exhibition of Adventure, which is a very awesome spread. These are the kind of... I like these kind of secret lairs a lot. Do I wish some of the card selections were a little bit better? Yes, but the art's awesome. We get some sick theming that we definitely would probably only see through secret lairs. So this feels... These feel like secret lairs that are good. I personally predict that these are another type of secret lair that I feel like could have supply problems. Because like even off the back of exquisite blood and like a really blingy Goldspan Dragon, like those are expensive cards that are in demand. But these, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, very popular property. Baldur's Gate 3, one of the most popular video games of the last couple years. There'll be a lot of demand for this. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, between Exquisite Blood and Goldspan Dragon, those are both like $35 ish median price, which is like the price of your secret lair before shipping and stuff. So, and I would suppose that like. The Ponder art is really sick. Ponder is a really powerful card.
I love Wayne Ranger.
I imagine awesome. There's going to be a lot of Eternal players buying 4 copies of that to get 4 Ponders.
Yeah.
It's me.
It's really sick. I'm having a hard time choosing which one is my favorite because I do love that Goldspan Dragon one, but the Ponder might beat it out for me.
I really hope one of these drops is the what they did in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, like the module style frame, where it just looks like it's the actual module cover of like a book. Those were really sweet. I hope they bring those back.
Me as well. Those are so sick. I like those a lot. I bought all of them, except for the ones that were already really expensive on release, like Goldspan Dragon. I bought every single one of them in foil, and I love looking at them. Do I play them in anything? Well... No, but I like looking at them. They do look so cool. I need to dig up the Karlak that I have so I can sell it for like $50 or whatever it is now.
I think she's gone down a little bit since.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
She's like 20. There.
Dang, I had no idea.
Speaking of things that are about 20, it's time to bring back future sight frames, baby. Mystery Booster 2, it's on its way. Gavin got to have a great time at Gen Con in his little Q&A. I got to talk to him about it. He was so excited. He got the opportunity of doing something he had always dreamed of. Somebody asked him about a product, and then on the spot, he got to be like, hey, we're making that. Because he was going to announce Mystery Booster 2 at the end of his panel. But in the middle of the panel, someone was like, hey, I love Mystery Booster. Are we ever getting a second one? And he got to be like, well, yes. I just think that's neat. Mystery Booster, for those of you who are not as familiar with the product, is kind of like, well, it's actually kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's a mystery booster. It is technically a curated list that is, I believe, nearly 2,000 cards long, if not more, of cards that can be in the pack. And it's very much like a chaos draft scenario where everyone's opening up these packs. You're not going to have much cohesion at all between all of them, and you just have to make something work. Every pack you open of it, you're rarely, if ever, going to see a repeat card. And then they also had really fun, wacky playtest cards in them, which are kind of unset adjacent in that they read them and can figure out how they work. They're cards that they're almost never going to print in like actual Magic. How to Keep an Is It Mage Busy is definitely my favorite one of all time. The blue red hybrid mana spell that when it resolves, it just returns itself to your hand, and that's its only effect. That's, you know, just a lot of that kind of silly Magic cards they wouldn't make otherwise. Mystery Booster 2, it's coming back, except this time around. There's not going to be an addition for LGSs. We can talk about that in a second. They are putting a bunch of white border cards into the set. A whole bunch of the cards are getting white border treatment. And then a whole bunch of cards are also getting the Future Sight Frame treatment from the nearly 20-year-old, if not 20-year-old already, set Future Sight. And a lot of the Future Sight frames, they look so hot because they're putting like Vanguard cart art and a bunch of really old art in the Future Sight frames. They look so good to me. I'm excited for this release. Dan, Emma, Mystery Booster gamers?
No, decidedly not. This is so like unset adjacent to me that I have no interest in doing any Mystery Booster drafting.
Fair enough. Like the idea.
Emma?
So I like the idea. It's just I know I'm not going to get the opportunity to play it because I know Mystery Boosters, especially the second one, is going to be at conventions only. If they're at Magic Cons next year, maybe I'll get to play them. It's been really cool to see people actually excited about a Magic release, if that makes sense. You know, it's very yes. easy for people to be critical, but oh, it's another preview season. What the hell is this? You know, what's this nonsense? Do I have to pay attention to it? But Gavin rolls out with a Mystery Booster set. Everyone's just really excited because it's just brimmed with nostalgia. As you said, Cal, you know, there's these Vanguard arts. There's reprints of, like, Brainstorm in the Future Sight frame. You've got Pyroblast in the Future Sight frame, which I'm excited for Pauper. And there's just tons of cool different things. And it's wild to think that the Future Sight frame was originally designed to, like, be a future imagining of a Magic frame. But it actually turns out to be the most retro Magic frame now because...
Oh, definitely.
Even in comparison to the retro frame, which has been printed a ton since Modern Horizons, it's just wild to think that this future sight frame is actually considered really old school now. And Gavin's picked a really good time to just like bring that back.
I do think like aesthetically, it is one of the more like of its time card frames of all of like it looks so early 2000s. This is if the Matrix and Magic had a combined card frame baby.
It's been really cool to see people excited about it on Twitter, you know, just enjoying it, getting really excited. I was like, oh my God, I can pick up an Urza in the Vanguard art and I can play that as my commander and stuff like that. It's just
that's
really
extremely cool. Future Sight, Thassa's Oracle, very cool.
Yeah.
There's some very cool reprints.
I think there's Underworld Breach in Future Sight as well.
Yeah, there is.
It's been refreshing to see people just like be excited about it and not have the pitchforks ready and just go, argh.
Emma, you said thumbs down for white borders, though. You're not into that?
I'm not a big fan of white borders just because I came into Magic around the modern border. So I didn't play with white borders. When I first saw one, I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, what are they doing? I can understand why you may want them in your mana base, for example. So if you have like a fetch land that has like one basic and you want that to be white border so it's easy to find when you're searching for it, sure. I don't see the appeal of white border just because I wasn't in playing Magic when they existed. That wasn't normalized for me. So I just think it's weird. If people are into it, sure.
Similarly, I like came into Magic when white borders were like pretty universally hated on. Like, it was not cool. They were, in fact, quite uncool. I don't think the execution of them on these new cards looks all that great to me as a person who is a fan of white borders now and is sort of like retro sense.
They just look incomplete to me.
Yes, I think that's what it is. And largely because of the way that the black borders are structured now, where it's not just this super clean, like sort of picture frame, but it's like much more designed into the card itself. Yeah, like you said, it just looks sort of incomplete.
If people enjoy it, good on them. I'm not going to rain on anyone's parade, but I would just stay away. The future sight frames do look cool. I might be tempted to pick a few of them up. I did consider it for my cube, but at the same time, I'm trying to make my cube more accessible for newer players, and they're just going to be thrown off by the future sight frame.
I think this product's neat. This product like is for me, but I just love like chaos drafting. I love this kind of stuff of just like, all right, let's open up a bunch of packs and make it work. So like this product is kind of for me.
I would play it. So, you know, Gavin's really good at this stuff. You know, there's a lot of love that goes into it. So I have no doubt it would be really fun to play.
All right. I did say at the top of this, it is going to be conventions only. Whereas in Mystery Booster 1, they had a convention edition, which had, playtest cards in it. And they also had like a store edition where you could play it at your local game store. And those, rather than having the playtest cards, they had a foil slot. So you could have like a guaranteed foil of an entirely different list of cards, which did include Mana Crypt. That was the big get for sure. Somebody asked Mark Rosewater, hey, why is this convention only? You know, I can't really go to conventions and play because Wizards doesn't have events where I live, and Mystery Booster was one of my favorite products of the year. Mark responded thusly, I try to use this blog to help explain the behind the scenes of discussions. Conventions was looking for a unique play experience for conventions. They decided that Mystery Booster 2 could be that experience, so they funded it. Conventions, of course, being the department at Wizards that runs stuff like Magic Cons, etc. It's at conventions because the convention team paid for it out of their budget to be a unique thing at conventions. If that didn't happen, the product would not have existed. There would be no Mystery Booster 2. We're full up on normal releases. There's plenty of feedback from all of you to make less product releases, not more. Dang. at least they're hearing it. So, conventions was able to make something happen that normally wouldn't happen. We did realize, though, that not everyone has the ability to attend conventions. That's why we made Festival in a Box. It's a way for players who are unable to attend a convention to join in on that experience, including playing Mystery Booster 2. That is another Secret Lair adjacent product that is coming soon, Festival in a Box. It has Mystery Boosters in it, and it has the promos from some of the different Magic Cons in it. Such as, you know, the Turtle Ponder and the little tulip Swords to Plowshares and a really cool Plains, and it's also going to come with an exclusive drop of its own, like an exclusive Secret Lair drop, which is like more chibi Planeswalker, more chibi guys, except it's like Orvar the all form and Omnath Locus of Creation and all that kind of stuff. And then also they threw some collector boosters in there that they had laying around, like Lost Caverns of Ixalan and Commander Masters. Hey, you get a Commander boost. You get a Commander Masters pack. You get a Commander Masters pack. We literally can't give these things away to our distributors. Okay.
Listen, sometimes a pallet falls over in the factory and you got a bunch of broken boxes. You got to do something with
them. That's true. That's true. So this is another thing that's going to be available on the Secret Lair website coming August 19th, which is, wow, this weekend? It's going to be $250. It comes with all that stuff I said, and then also a single booster box of Mystery Booster 2. I believe it is also going to be limited supply. Yep, limited quantity product available only while supplies last, and limited to 3 per person. Will I try to get one?
Maybe. I might try, probably not. Just for the Mystery Booster box.
Yeah, but I would not be surprised
when I sit down on time and I'm sitting there for 45 minutes and I'm not going to get a chance.
I might honestly try just for the Amsterdam Swords to Plowshares. I think that card is so cool.
It's so awesome.
But I am fully prepared to sit there for 20 minutes and then be like, well, I could be in the woods right now. And then
it's also like, as much as I hate to say this, it's really good from a magic finance standpoint, because you've got the mystery boosters, you've got the promos as well. And even though Cal joked about the collector boosters for Commander Masters, they're like $50 right now. Like,
huh?
They're worth something.
I guess nobody bought them.
And the singles in those tend to be pretty good. So you could just open some good foils for Commander that you could just easily flip.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the finance folks, sure, it's limited to 3 per person, but multiple accounts exist. You can easily get around that. So I just wouldn't be surprised if this gets snapped up in minutes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, there is also a promo card that I really want. Convention Morrow. It's a playtest card, which is the 3rd ever card for Magic to have art by Mark Rosewater. It's just very funny. I don't even know what the card does, but it has a big tree on it.
Very Mark. It says
MagicCon on its shirt.
Yeah, for Mystery Booster 2, they got actual artists this time instead of just Wizards employees like creating the art. Which is great, but also I kind of missed the Wizards employee art, because a lot of it was just, you know, unserious.
Well, that's all we have to say about Mystery Boosters. That's all we have to say about Mystery Boosters. That's all we have to say about Secret Lairs. I was going to talk about Foundations a little bit, but we still have plenty of time to talk about Foundations on future episodes of the pod. So we'll get to that one next time. It's time to roll into the one and only final recurring segment on the show, and that is the co-host's notebook. It's time for the co-host notebook, the part of the show where we talk about whatever our co-hosts want to talk about for a couple of minutes. Emma?
Yes?
What do you have written down in your co-host notebook today?
So on the notes, I have nothing because I forgot to write something. So I have finished Dragon Age, finished the series, finished Inquisition the other week. So that was really good and exciting. Kind of sad it's over because I got really invested into it. And now I'm going to start playing Baldur's Gate 3. So there's a good chance I might not be on the podcast next time. So I'll just be playing Baldur's Gate
3. Emma will just like emerge from a haze 2 months from now.
Just like, oh. I'm just going to roll dice every time you ask me a question if I can just like roll persuasion or something.
Mm-hmm. Just roll a little d20. And
yeah. But yeah, I picked up Baldur's Gate 3 this week. Been wanting to play it for a while. Fortunately, I've missed like most of the spoilers for the game, so I'm going in blind, which is really exciting. So that's going to be my next thing that I jump in the rabbit hole over, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Heck yeah. I hope you have a great time with it. I loved it a lot.
I'm a big fan. I was a big fan of the first 2 Baldur's Gate games, so I will be surprised if I hate this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like very much up your alley from what I know. And then you have to also decide which character you will make your entire personality for the period of time that you're playing the game, by my understanding.
Okay.
For me, it was Shadowheart. So write that down. Dan, anything in your co-host notebook? No,
I've been doing a lot of new stuff lately. I went to a new park I've never been to before. And then the next day, last weekend, I went to a new record store that I've never been to before. So, yeah, it's a lot of new stuff going on in my life. Weather broke here in Philly. So I've been spending more time outside and less time streaming and doing Magic content stuff, which has been kind of nice, to be honest. Honestly, not a whole lot new going on. Same old woods, records, Elden Ring DLC. That's been my life for the past 2 months, according to Harold Horn co-host notebook.
Nice. There we go. There we go. We love to see it. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. Dan, Emma, do you have anything to leave our listeners with before we go?
Yeah, read my content on TCG Player. Okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah, read Emma's content or I'm going to beat you up. And read my stuff, too. It's on my personal blog, which I don't have anywhere public anymore. But if you can find it, read all of the articles on it. And then also view all of my public content. Moderately MTG on Twitter, Moderately Anonymous MTG on all of the other platforms. Twitch, YouTube, etc., etc. Cal's making such a face right now. You don't like my online moniker, huh?
Moderately a sus MTG.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, and Grok is woke. I heard that somewhere.
When Dan is sus. Thanks so much for listening. We have a great interview coming up for you after this short interlude, this short break. Thank you to Dan. Thank you to Emma. Thank you to everyone who's listening. And thank you to me. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hey there! Thanks for listening to this podcast episode. If you want to help support the podcast, check out our Patreon. You'll get a sticker in the mail and access to our Patreon exclusive content, which I'm always cooking up more of every day. We've got bonus questions with guests, exclusive interviews, me thought dumping about magic in my life. What else could you want? Plus, when we read letters to the editors, those sent through Patreon DMs or the Discord get first priority. Yep, we have a Discord that you'll be thrown into. Come talk to me about professional wrestling. Anyways, without any further ado, let's get back into this episode. Hello and welcome back. As always, we have another great interview guest for you on this episode of The Herald's Horn. And this week, I am joined by the one, the only, Ian, perhaps better known as comedian, MTG, CDH grinder, content creator and extraordinaire, so on and so forth. Ian, thank you for joining me on this episode of The Herald's Horn.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. I forgot to also include in your title Scry Man or perhaps Scry Boy.
Yeah, I believe Scry Boy is how Scry I go. Boy. Steve is very insistent on being a scry man. I'm like, I'm
a scry boy. Steve is a scry man. Okay. Yes. We'll write that down. Well, yes, Ian, thank you for joining me on this episode. We've known each other for a long time now. What you may not know is that this interview will be the first explicit CDH content on the podcast, except for when I completely biffed talking about, the cookout. Yeah, when I completely biffed every single detail of talking about the cookout for like 10 minutes on an episode months ago. I remember you like, we were chatting and you're like, yeah, I listened to the latest episode. You got every detail about that tournament wrong. I was like, oh, brother.
I was like, close. Well, no, but okay. It's all right. You're trying your best.
Look, that episode was one of the last episodes where I really winged everything. Don't tell the listeners that I winged everything for a win. Oh no. Brother. Geez. They just heard that one. Well, yes, this is the first time we'll be talking about CDH on the podcast pretty much ever. So really, really getting back to my roots today. Ian, I'm going to start you out where I start off everyone on this podcast. How did you start playing Magic the Gathering? The important background information we need to know.
Yeah. So I feel like I have a weird origin. So I was a camp counselor at an overnight camp, and a bunch of the other co-counselors were players, and they would occasionally play with some of the campers. But one of them had like a legacy power cube, like not like a full power cube, but like definitely the real, this is like pre-proxying becoming like not that crazy, right? So he just like brought a cube of like legacy staples to this summer camp of like really good cards, maybe not like original duels, but like a lot of good stuff. And so I learned through this cube, and I just kind of like walked over to one of the counselors, and it was a bunch of people I like enjoyed spending time with, right? So I was over there just vibing with them, and they were like, hey, Ian, come check out this game. And I remember like drafting it for the first time and being like looking at a Thran Dynamo and being like, 4 mana to only make 3 mana? Yeah, right. Get out of here. and like just not understanding how fast mana work, not understanding how like what the broken cards were. But just over time, like started getting into it. I left like a week later, picked up my first ever of those like M14 learn to play boxes with a bunch of random packs in it. And then the rest was sort of history. Khans of Tarkir was like the set that really locked me in though, for sure.
And you were playing a lot of Khans then at that time? You saw those fetch lands and you said, oh yes, this is engaging Magic the Gathering. Get me in.
Yeah. You know what it was though? I studied martial arts when I was younger for like a really long time. And so like the Jeskai being like these temple monks and like stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, I can get behind these guys. Yeah.
So you obviously now are, what you are known for now is you are a CEDH tournament grinder, CEDH video creator. You cover a lot of tournaments. You participate in a lot of tournaments. You coach people who would like to get better at playing the format. How did we get from like playing Legacy Cube as a camp counselor and being introduced to the game that way? I guess I started you off at a theoretically a pretty high power level, even though you may not have realized it as much. How did we get from point A to point Z, right? What was our journey here?
Sure. So for those who have been playing CEDH for a while, they may know Brayden. Brayden was a very early CEDH player and very early like community member who he proselytized the format a lot. He would walk around just especially he came to Massachusetts after living in Philadelphia, I think, for a long time. And my local scene was just one of the places where he happened to go. So he started picking up the scene around there. And I had a friend who was playing Najeela. And it was like right when Najeela started to be recognized as like, yeah, you basically can't play this fair. Like it was right when Battlebond first came out. And I was playing Mono Blue Naban, which is like the bounce wizard thing. Or it doubles all ETBs of wizards, right? But I was able to like hang with this like very clear high powered combo deck because I just like would sequence my spells correctly. I would answer the threats appropriately. And he was like, Ian, you like don't play bad magic. You should come play CEDH with us sometime. And I was like, okay, sure.
Okay, so you didn't even have the little period of time where you're like, no, I'm going to stay over here.
Yeah, I feel like I was, I have an improv background and I feel like I yes-and a lot of shit,
You know, that makes sense.
Yeah, right? It explains a lot about me.
Look, Ian, I think we all know that you were a little theater kid. I think we all knew that. I think we picked up on that one communally. I don't think you're revealing anything right now.
The one
we know what you are. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. So no, I was just kind of like open to it. I was like, yeah, this stuff seems fun. I like busted things. But like the funny part was I also started in such like an anti-establishment way. Like I was like, I learned Fibblethip. That was my first CEDH deck that I put a lot of effort to. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna crush all these CEDH grinders with Fibblethip and it's gonna be so funny.
Like,
and
like War of the Spark Fibblethip, it draws a card or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you even do with that?
100 So Proteus Staff, the way it's written is that if you only play one creature, you stack your entire library. And Fibblethip says if it comes in from your library, you draw two cards off of its ETB. So if you got a Fibblethip and a Proteus Staff, you could stack your 100 cards in any order and create a 100 card doomsday pile.
And then just like draw it all pretty much.
Yeah.
Wow. Was he cooking?
I won a couple times.
Like, what's the percent win rate on that?
not great.
No, I think a lot of people get into this. I think that's a very common place to start for CEDH, especially before for a lot of people, like competing in tournaments, they'd become. I still don't even know if it's like the default mode or the default frame. It starts to feel like it started to feel like it may be, but especially back then, a lot of people, the idea for a lot of people was like, oh, I'm going to play what I perceive to be an extremely powerful commander deck and attempt to win. And that's what I care about. And so a lot of people were like, oh, let's do something really funky and still be able to try to win the game. And so stuff like Fibblethip obviously fits right inside of that mold. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I was on the early discords for sure where they were like, oh, these are the decks that are blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whatever. but it's you know, I think there was a lot of early content that, I mean, we didn't have tournaments until relatively recently, right? Like, if we're being honest, like, there were some cockatrice tournaments that happened quarterly. Yeah.
There were cockatrice tournaments, yeah. Maybe some LGS tournaments that, you know, yeah. were much more of a local thing. There were the first couple Monarch tournaments, and then we've had the Top Deck tournaments and stuff more than that as well. Yeah.
Right, but even then, when I started, like, those, like, Monarch was
definitely.
Like, Monarch started during COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
As, like, the Trice tournaments. So, yeah, there was literally, like, nothing. I think, so, before COVID started, the largest East Coast event ever was 64 players, the DDM gaming event. And I was there, and it was historic, and that was 64 players, and we thought this was the craziest thing in the entire world.
Hey, I mean, at that point in time, getting 64 players in the same spot to play something that was still not very widely recognized as anything, it's kind of a big deal.
No, it was sick. Yeah, absolutely. And then they said, everyone's coughing too hard, no hanging out with people anymore. And we said, okay, we will congregate online.
We'll congregate online. Now, with Thassa's Oracle. Was Thassa's Oracle legal at that DDM tournament? Was that pre...
That was the first Flash Hulk legal tournament. Holy, yeah,
that's funny. Yeah. I can never remember like when exactly Theros Beyond Death came out, because I do remember like no lifing Theros Beyond Death like sealed leagues on Arena because I had nothing better to do.
Yeah,
but I don't know if people really got to play much CEDH before they shut it down, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was yeah, because it was Sushi Hulk came out, I think, in like the early part of that year, and then we locked down like a month later. Yeah, like, it was a pretty quick turnaround. Yeah, I'm not saying they're related.
Sushi Hulk became a thing you could play in CDH, and they said, no, shut it all down, shut it all down.
You're like, no, get ready, get out of here. Is that the kind of takes you hope to get?
Oh, yeah, yeah, this is exactly, yes. And this, yeah, exactly. Keeping up with the facts you usually hear on this podcast, like me flubbing the facts about the CDH tournament, you know, we're really just keeping up with it. We have that is the standard of quality I hope to maintain, and so far we're doing great.
good.
So yes, you got to participate in this DDM tournament. There's these cockatrice tournaments. We come out of, you know, we go into COVID lockdown. We go into the world caring about COVID, and CDH is in its nascent popularity. You know, there are certain content creators that are like growing a lot of momentum around the format. I'm biased, but the one that does always come to mind for me is obviously Playing With Power. Experienced a ton of growth during that period. And similar, right? And tournaments started cropping up. Granted, cockatrice ones, and then we like came out of the world caring about COVID. And then suddenly CDH, I think, was like so much more popular secretly online than like anyone ever anticipated, and it's only been up since there. And you've kind of been riding on top of the wave the entire time. How have you done that, Ian?
So, I mean, it all started with me. So, Brayden, the aforementioned,
of course, it all comes back to Brayden.
It all comes back to Brayden, amen. but we did a podcast together called the CEDH Cast. And it was just a case of like, I wasn't the biggest grinder at the time. I wasn't like a name in the community. But what happened was I was just someone who Brayden enjoyed talking to. And we had the same goals, which was like, hey, we really like this format. Let's bring more people to it, right? But because of that, I was forced to look at the format under a critical lens every week, right? Every single day of every week, I was looking at the format and analyzing it, because I would have to go on a podcast and talk about it. And then COVID happened. I was sort of working in childcare, which is not a job that has the luxury of feeling great during COVID. And so I was sort of unemployed with nothing to do but talk about CEDH and have Discords where I played CEDH. And then I just played a lot of CEDH and made a lot of content about the format. And it's one of those things where I you know, I put in my 10,000 hours. I played a lot of the format, and it has grown with me as well, right? But it started out the case, like, I found a deck that I really enjoyed. I played Dominic or Thrasios for a while. I kind of discovered Winota as a CEDH commander. And that was a deck that I took to a lot of my first, like, early top results was Winota, that I rode on the coattails of Winota for a very long time. And so there was a lot of stuff that like built up momentum from that. But just the more I played and I loved the game, so I just kept playing, right? And kept putting in hours and putting in time and brewing and innovating and pushing the format. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into making decks viable, but there's definitely a lot of archetypes that exist right now that I definitely have had a mm-hmm. hand in, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a thing of like, I became a student of the game, right? And I truly fell in love with being a member of the CEDH community and playing the game. And it's kind of grown with me. I feel like I'm one of the few people who are grinders nowadays who also fit that like CEDH boomer category as well.
Yeah, there's not many left. Most of them have like moved on to only doing content or don't play CEDH at all or are TOing tournaments or whatever. You know, you're one of the few who's still kind of doing all of the above. Well, not TOing tournaments. Exactly. Maybe you should be TOing tournaments.
It's been a conversation from time to time. Yeah.
Retirement arc, all that. Yeah.
Exactly. I'd rather be a commentator in my retirement arc.
I mean, hey, look, I think that's something that's a very interesting, not growth potential, because I think we're already doing a pretty good job at that. But I think there's a real potential of like people who do get to grind a whole ton moving into the, you know, moving into the commentary space, et cetera, et cetera. We can never have enough commentators. Everyone, we can always have more. That's good idea. Mm-hmm. Good idea, Ian. Retire to be a commentator. And you can just be like, well, back in my day.
I remember
when we won with Thassa's Oracle. Now that card's unplayable. What has happened to my beloved CEDH? So yeah, that does kind of lead into a question that I really did want to ask you. Mm-hmm. And we just alluded to the fact that you are one of the few people who's really like grinding, actively succeeding, and also kind of mm-hmm. fits into that CEDH boomer category. What is it about it that does appeal to you? You know, like you are one of the few people that I would know, or even maybe the only person I would know who's just like, oh yeah, I guess I'll just drive 3 hours on this random Saturday up the coast to go play in this 32-person CEDH tournament. Yeah, let's get those rips in, baby. What is it about it for you? What keeps you jamming?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, it's you know, there's all this discussion within the realm of Magic about like what CEDH is compared to quote traditional 1v1 Magic, right? And it is its own beast, right? The multiplayer aspects of the format are so intricate and interesting. I also like that you can sit down at the highest level of competition and laugh. Yeah. And I think that is like such an underrated aspect of this format is like when I sit down and play against people, I will never forget the finals of the, I think, Oktoberfest, I want to say two years ago or 3 years ago now, where it was myself, Brian Koval, and two other lovely gentlemen whose names are escaping me at the current moment. But we had at the end of almost a 2.5 hour game, the TO and the head judge both said, we have never seen a CEDH game where we go from like tearing up laughing to seriousness on the stack within a millisecond. And they're like, it was just such a beautiful transition the whole time. We were entertained throughout the whole thing because it was just that nature where it was immediately lighthearted to, okay, we're now back to serious mode. Mm-hmm. And then, all right, we're taking a second to shuffle. 16 jokes are cracked. You know what I mean? And it was just, everyone had that energy. They had that life to them. And that to me is everything in CEDH. It is the nature that this is a social format at the end of the day. And the meta can be super diverse because there's this artificial creativity that is forced when someone can bring a new deck. And because of the social dynamics of the game, people will know how to take on the established deck. But sometimes this wild card can come in. And it basically creates this artificially diverse meta at all times, which, you know, I've always been looking for in competition. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sit against the same decks all the time, right? And when you look at 100 card piles of very different cards, it's pretty sweet. And yeah, there are overlaps, right? Like, I'm not going to complain that one blue deck has a Flusterstorm and the other blue deck has a Flusterstorm. It's a good counterspell. Boo-hoo. Right? But the 30 to 40 cards in everyone's decks that make them truly unique... It says a whole lot, right? Like, there's so much intricacy in that environment. And then, you know, you can play the same decks with the same pods with the same people over and over again. and it will still be different because of the variance of the format. And you can switch the people out and still play the same decks, and it will still be a different game because
Everyone brings a different social dynamic to the table. Everyone will make probably very different gameplay decisions with the same deck. Everyone will have different things to say at different points of the game, which, you know, as we've alluded to, a very social thing. Everyone brings different wrinkles to that. And so every single, I mean, with the 100 card singleton aspect, you could have the exact same, you could play the exact same game with the exact same people five times over, and it would be entirely different every time, right?
Yeah, I love sharing the story of me. I played Rog'Sai at a tournament recently, and I like kept like a turn to Talion on going forth, and I'm like, this is not
this is not what we're supposed to be doing.
The whole podcast laughing at me. I was like, I've been so mid range coping that I'm like, I don't know. I was like, am I supposed to be jamming? I was like, I don't know. I'm gonna play this value engine though. So yeah, I mean, different people, different identities, different styles. It's all relevant, right? And like, that's what I really enjoy about the format. It is social, and people, like, it is advantageous to you to be fun to be around, and that very incentive just creates a better environment, in my opinion.
So that's what's kept you going, huh?
Yeah. That makes sense. That and I like really cool brews.
Yeah, no, exactly. And in that, you have, I think you've done a lot to forward what a lot of people know about specifically like the tournament side of CEDH, because you spend a lot of time making content covering that side of CEDH. You know, there's a lot of content out there that is like, oh, you know, oh, CEDH gameplay. So people can say, oh, this is what CEDH looks like. And there's some amount of written content or whatever about CEDH looks like, but you do a really good job of highlighting players, people, that's redundant, decks, there we go, players, decks, different scenes, different changes that people make. So is it a lot of the same appeal of like what keeps you playing? Is that what keeps you interested in covering the scene as well for your YouTube channel?
Yeah,
is that,
yeah.
you know, YouTube plus coaching is like what you do full time now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I have a background in childcare, as I mentioned earlier, right? So like, and when I started the CEDH cast, right, as I mentioned before, it was about getting new people into the format, right? And so when, and big shout out to Ken Bauman, because he was one of the first people to be like, hey, you should be imparting some of your wisdom. And I was like, oh my God, you're right.
Actually,
and when I started doing
that, I am so smart.
Oh man, you will never get me to agree to a statement like that. I literally, Michael Levine literally chastised me because at an SCG con within the past year, someone was like, someone came up to me, had me sign a playmat, and another onlooker goes like, oh, are you like a pro or something? And I was like, yeah, I guess like probably the closest thing you can be at this format. And Michael literally goes, Ian, you do this as a job. You are the definition of a professional. And I was like, I don't know. It just sounds weird, man.
Like pro player when it comes to Magic the Gathering does like have its own little, a lot of people think that means you like play on the pro tour or whatever. It's like,
exactly. It's got its own
not baggage, because that has a negative connotation, but you know, it's a weird term to define in the Magic sphere.
It's got carry on. It's legally distinct from baggage, but it's still there.
Yes, exactly. You know, so you do a lot of top X breakdowns. You do a lot of those. How do you, I have always wondered, how do you like decide what tournaments you are going to cover? Is it just like, oh, this one's, some of them are kind of like gimmies, right? Whenever we have the latest 200 person event, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But a lot of your stuff in week to week, because you do about like one or more a week now, right?
Yeah, it's usually about one average week.
You know, some of the tournaments are actually like pretty small. Do you just look for spicy stuff, you know, if we don't have something big to cover?
It used to be so easy, right? I'd be like, all right,
here's our tournament for the month. Actually, there's a tournament you can cover, one or more tournament you can cover every week, regardless of size. That's crazy, actually.
And some of them I've built up. So, like, there's been a lot of factors that go into it, right? Like, I, you know, very easy level. I obviously, if I go to a tournament, I'm gonna cover that one.
Yep.
Right? Because like it's so much better for me to be like not sitting there going, oh, a bunch of stuff happened in this tournament I never went to.
Oh, wow, this deck sure like, looks neat.
I was on the ground floor. I can say like, hey, I was here, I did the thing, this is my experience, all of that stuff. I can even impart like, this is what I brought, and did it succeed, did it not succeed, right? Like all of those
it's things, another
right?
layer.
I can give you a and there's a whole layer of like, this is what people were saying on the ground floor, right? Like just the dumb stuff like that. But you know, and then when it comes to sort of those other areas, right? Some groups I have an established relationship with, right? Like I've had people be like, hey, I would love to reach out and like get our tournaments covered. And like, I am at least always open to those things. Now, the format's gotten so big that I can't take all of those requests because it's gotten a little out of hand at this point. But then other times, like recently I covered a tournament in Germany. No one asked me to cover that, but I was like, you know what? We never talk about tournaments in Europe. And so I saw this very reasonably sized, I think it was like an 85 person German tournament, and I was like absolutely happy to cover that. And I've also been pushing for that in my personal travel as well. I've been really, really trying to be like, hey, I've heard about this tournament group, y'all are across the country to a state I've never been to, I've never traveled to. If you guys can help me get out there at any point, I would love to do like the full scope of coverage. And I've done it with a couple states nowadays, and I've done it for a couple different tournament groups and things like that. But like, it is part of my personal goal to see CEDH throughout our country, throughout our world, and be like, hey, like I want to get a firsthand experience in these scenes and be like right now I can tell you what it's like playing on the West Coast versus the East Coast, and even in like the North versus the South in each of those areas, right? Like the difference between California and Portland, Oregon is like a whole different thing, right? And I have a rough idea of what those things are because I've been, you know, lucky enough to be able to get out to those scenes, right? So for me, it's about really spreading that diversity, that message, all that kind of stuff. Once again, firsthand experiences, you can't really beat that, but everything else has just been like, hey, if I can travel there within a way that I am not financially hurting myself to do so, I'm going to try and do it, you know?
In a world of CEDH tournament participants, Ian, you have continually been on top. You are really high up on the very soon to happen top deck invitational. You finished very high on the top deck invitational leaderboard. What position? I thought in my mind I thought it was third for some reason, but yes, you beat Jorman. To get first place. All right, you finished first on the top deck invitational leaderboard. We'll have to see how you do at that event.
I know I'm gonna scrub out so hard.
I finished in the top 64 of this CEDH tournament event coming soon to a Comedian MTG near you. You're consistently near the top or winning a lot of these events. We did actually talk on the show about you winning several Time Twisters in a row because you won two Time Twisters in a very short period of time. Three?
Yes.
Two?
Yes, that's probably the accolade of my career is within an 8-day span I did win two Time Twisters, which was...
That's a decent windfall.
It was a good time.
But even when, you know, when you aren't winning Time Twisters, you're consistently, you know, top 16-ing, top 4-ing, winning events of various sizes. Do you have a secret? Blow out all of your coaching students. I remember you saying to me like once when we were chatting, like you don't actually like practice CEDH really anymore because your practice is talking about it all the time, thinking about it and playing in tournaments, which I guess is about as good as practice for tournament CEDH as you can get, right? do you think it's the reps? Do you think it's because you're good at the game? Do you think it's because you think about it a lot? Is it a mix of all of it?
I think there's definitely certain natures of it, right? Like I've gone on record many times saying I'm not a brilliant Magic player. I can say that I am a very good CEDH player. I can say that I'm definitely above the average on Magic players, right? But I don't think by any means that I have any sort of intellect that outnumbers any sort of people, right? I think the things that benefit me are a big part of the social game for sure. I mean, That in combination of like becoming a student of the game, like I mentioned, right? Like truly loving to learn about it has been everything for me, right? Like I am like most CEDH players and have aggressive ADHD. and so for me, it's just one of those things that, I mean, when I get hyper-focused on a deck, like, trust me, I will sit there for hours just being like, oh, I haven't left my desk in 5 hours because I was trying to figure out this puzzle that could not be solved. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a fixation.
Oh, brother, sure. This deck still stinks.
Oh, well, I've done that too. there are, I believe, 715 decks in my mox field right now. So that should, some of those are coaching.
Do you have a rough estimate of how many of them you've actually played?
I want to say 50, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's a lot. It's a lot of cooking with few results.
I've burnt a lot of dishes along the way for sure. a part of it really has become like loving this game and like definitely playing it, right? The amount of times I punt is significantly less because I've run into interactions over and over again, mm-hmm. right? But this format is the adapter's format. If you can adapt, you can succeed in CEDH because it is a format that challenges you consistently. You have to deal with your cards. You have to deal with your opponent's cards. You have to deal with revealed information, unrevealed information. You have to deal with some people's cadence, some people's tone. Some people are really good liars. Some people are really good truthers. Some people are really good at making you believe that they're your friend when they're ready to backstab you like crazy. There is so much to be said. Now, I am of the camp. This is a free bit of information I'll throw out. No Lie Club. Yes,
absolutely. Do you have the pin and everything?
I do. I did get the pin in Colorado. I've kept to my word in CEDH. Now, will I, obviously bring up things that are advantageous to me? Absolutely. That's how you win in a social game, right? But if I say like, hey, look, I'm going to untap and pass, right? Like that is my thing. And it has helped me a lot in that game because your word means a lot when, especially, guess what? If at any point I go, oh, hey, I'm going to tell a bold-faced lie. If you think the person who I lied to and wins in a game isn't going to immediately
blast you from the heavens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A YouTube creator, Ian, lied to me in game, piece of shit. Sorry.
No. Totally makes sense. No, and that is kind of like one of those things too that has increasing returns the more notable you are or the more people know of you, because there are a lot of people who might like spike a CEDH tournament and could like get away with lying for a time twister once or whatever, right? And I'm sure you also could get away with lying for a time twister once, but then you are incentivized to want to continue playing, and your personal greatest currency, especially because like as you admitted, you're like a fine to serviceable to good Magic the Gathering player, right? And you're combining that with other stuff, the rest of the sauce, to win a lot. And so if you toss out 80% of that sauce to win one game, you're quite disadvantaged. Yeah.
It's also like, I mean, I started getting pretty okay at this format through a lot of the things that I do naturally, right? Like I'm a person who sits down and cracks jokes and tries to make people feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm someone who tries to play defensively and work with the table and collaborate and all of that stuff, right? And those things happen to yield pretty positively in CEDH. So I, if I started not acting like myself and lying through my teeth and just being somebody else, it's not going to help me. You know, I tell people all the time, no matter what your personality is, try and utilize the best of that to feel comfortable at the table so that you can be the best social version of yourself, right? Now, if your personality is to, cuss people out at the table, maybe modify that one a little bit, but do your best.
Look, there's a reason I'm not playing in the top deck open this coming weekend, Ian. It's because I just can't take it at the table anymore. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
No, it's because I'm washed. Well, Ian, we have been going for about a half hour, which is my goal for these interviews these days. Ian, is there anything on the table? Is there anything you absolutely have to tell the people? Is there anything that I should have asked you that we can talk about for 20 more minutes?
20 more minutes? Woof, oh,
yeah, or
there's
more.
There's a lot we can talk about 20 minutes. No, I mean, realistically, it's just, it's a great format. There's a little bit of homogeneity coming down the line with some decks that are popping up a little bit. Wizards printings as of late have not been my favorite, realistically. Mm-hmm. I think it hasn't been the healthiest thing for the format, mm-hmm. but there's still a lot to be explored. There's still a lot that is good. I mean, if I can soapbox for 20 seconds, is that okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can soapbox okay. here.
If any members of the CAG or the RC are listening, no one needs an Orcish Bowmasters. I hate that card so much. It's so unhealthy for the format. It's nobody's friend. If anyone likes it, it's because they don't like other people having fun. And if I hear the argument one more time that it stops people drawing cards, I'm going to actually bleed out my eyeballs.
Hey, yeah, let's just unban Hall Breacher instead. So, like, then you can flash in the...
I heard that argument this weekend, and I was like, those are two different conversations. I hate that card.
Hall Breacher, Hall Breacher can stay right where it is, as far as I'm concerned. That created some of the most miserable games.
Oh, that is one of my most infamous videos, I think. It's Hall Breacher got banned, and it's me flipping off Hall Breacher. The video, and there were so many angry people in the comments.
That's funny. That's funny. I wish I liked that card. I don't. I wish I understood why people like that card.
But yeah, me too.
I never will. All right. Well, there's your soapbox. You heard it here. CAG, RC members, all one of you who are listening. I won't name names. I know one of you are listening. You heard it here first. Ban Orcish Bowmaster.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Or else Ian will stop playing CDH.
Ooh, that's a good threat. Yeah, yeah.
Surprise. No. Ian. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Herald's Horn.
Thanks for having me, friend. I was going to say, and if anyone is interested in taking that next level up in their CDH career, you can find me in a lot of places, but comedianmtg@gmail.com is the easiest one. That's it.
That's the email. That's where I email to become good at CDH.
Mm-hmm. Just send an email and you immediately become good at CDH.
Finally, this is just what I needed. Goodbye, Ian.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info lives in the podcast description. If you want to reach out to me, whether with feedback, you want to give me money, or you just want to send a letter to the editor, hit up editorial@heraldshorn.com. Thanks again for listening to The Herald's Horn. We are having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks.